Chris White joins me this week to talk about yeast pitch rates in beer. This is Beersmith Podcast number 232.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 232, and it's early March 2021. Dr. Chris White joins me this week to discuss yeast pitch rates for beer. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with a new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. For more information, again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, I urge you to give Beersmith 3 Brewing Software a try. If you've not downloaded the new 3.1 update, grab it now as it includes improved data storage, additional dry hop options, new mash pH models, new add-ons, and much more. To download your free 21-day trial, go to beersmith.com today. Again, that's beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Dr. Chris White. Chris is the president of White Labs, Inc., a top provider of brewing yeast worldwide, as well as a 2015 winner of the AHA Governing Committee Award for a lifetime of achievement in brewing. He's also the author of the book Yeast, which is the ultimate reference for brewing yeast. Chris, it's great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, Brad. It's a pleasure to be back on the show, and look forward to talking to you again.
You've been doing a lot the last year, I understand. What have you been up to?
Well, like everybody, we've had a lot of working through the pandemic, as every company and family has had to do this year. And we've tried to do it as a family, keep everybody healthy, reduced workforce a little bit. And even if you don't have much of a reduced workforce, people have to stay home sometimes. They know somebody who got sick and things like that. So, working through a lot of those things while still keeping operations going in San Diego and Asheville and Copenhagen, Denmark. And in each location, there's also different things that are happening with the pandemic response and COVID testing and dining rules and who can be open and who cannot be open. So I've been filling my days with a lot of those details coming into to work in San Diego almost every day when I'm here. And I'm here most of the time because I really haven't been traveling this year, which is one nice thing, I guess, getting more time at home.
Pretty unusual. You used to travel all the time, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. So not even realize how much time I was spending on it, because it's just not the travel time. It's all the logistics. Like, what flight should I make? What time should I end? Should I get a rental car? Who else is going to be there? We're going there. What city am I coming back out of? And so you, even with help, you spend so much of your time on those details. And then there's the trip. So I just, by not having to do a lot of that, it's removed one of those stresses. I enjoy being at White Labs. I miss being in Copenhagen and Asheville, but with that staff and stuff. But we're all healthy. So,
and the craft breweries, we were talking a little bit before the show, but the craft breweries have been adapting as well, right?
They have, and I think I feel like a lot of things we have done is going to make us a stronger company for years to go. You know, we did a lot of things in innovation and working together and efficiencies and quality. And I think the industry has done that as well. If you look at what the investments have been in to-go packages, that's going to be great when the tap rooms and taps start being utilized again in heavy volume. The craft breweries will have a big tap market. They'll have a good to-go beers. They'll have better apps to get to-go beers. Maybe states will break down some of the direct shipping things. And And there'll be a little less competition. You know, a few breweries won't be able to make it, or really, even after they reopen, maybe not be very strong. But I think that'll be small.
Well, that's awesome. Today, you actually wanted to talk about pitch rates of yeast in beer. And let's start a little bit by talking about some of the bad things that can happen if you really do underpitch your beer, if you really don't pitch enough yeast in your beer.
Yes. There's a lot to talk about with pitch rates, and I thought your show would be a great topic for your listeners, because it's a little bit complicated, mm-hmm. and maybe overcomplicated at sometimes by what we do. There's a lot of numbers, so I'm going to throw a lot of numbers around that will make sense to some people. It will not make sense to some people, but I'll hopefully try to make it all workable. But there's a few fundamentals that haven't really changed since before people started looking at pitching rates on the homebrewing level. Is if you don't pitch enough yeast, the fermentation will be poor. You'll have a potential for contamination to creep in, and it doesn't make as good a beer.
And I mean, are there certain off flavors that are associated with underpitching?
Well, it changes the esters, fusel alcohols, and other acids, because you're changing the growth rate. It's not as textbook as we try to say, because each beer fermentation can be a little different. But yeah, if you get more yeast growth, they generally make higher fusel alcohols because they're making more cells. They generally make more esters. Sometimes you get less esters. I think the main point is it's different if you have less yeast than you should. You can also change those flavors if you have more yeast than you should. And it's not quite as precise as I think people feel. So that's why I'll kind of describe that a little bit. But if you don't have enough yeast, like I remember homebrewing, you know, I was homebrewing in the late 80s when I started, when I was a student at UC Davis. And, you know, kind of funny story, my roommate, it was just bouncing a lot of checks, and he bought a homebrewing setup, and he just left it sitting there. So me and another roommate eventually brewed with it. He never paid for it. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, he wrote a bad check. So that was my first homebrewing experience. But it was just sitting there for a year. Anyway, so we brewed with it, and I pitched some yeast, and the next day nothing happened. You know, and I called the homebrew store, and I got a different kind of response than I think we would give now. And that happened a few times when I was brewing early. And that's not good. You're going to get, especially if you're not good at the sanitation net or the aseptic stuff that you really need to be good at in the home setting, you're going to get growth of bacteria that adds their own flavors, lactic acid, for example, acetic acid, all sorts of different flavors that just make the beer undrinkable. So that's the really low level that does not work.
And I mean, fundamentally, and you talk about this in your book, which I have here, it's the yeast book, there's a limit to how much growth you can get out of a single generation of yeast, right? If I pitch a certain amount of yeast, it's only going to grow, I don't know what it is, 5-6 times or something like that in quantity before it kind of peters out, right?
Right. And there's a lot of reasons why. And even people, microbiologists that, you know, you might talk to or become homebrewers or brewers or whatever, they might have different yeast experiences with yeast. Because you can grow it in the laboratory with tons of oxygen and get 10, 20-fold growth. You can grow it in a beer and get 4-fold growth, 5-fold growth. You know, it's how we're doing these fermentations. And so generally in beer, when you add 10 million cells per mil, you know, it's going to grow at about 40 or 50 million cells per mil. So 4 or 5 times, if you give it enough oxygen, that's crucial. And if, the temperature's right and things like that. So, but since it spends most of its time in fermentation without oxygen, it has a maximum amount that it can grow. Mm-hmm. And you want that. You don't want to grow a whole bunch of yeast. You know, you're trying to make beer with a balance of flavors. And that's where I come back to, if you add way too little, you're going to have the imbalance of those flavors.
And how is this related to the calculating a pitch rate? When we talk about, you know, 5 or 6x growth, I assume if you pitch like, 100 billion cells or something, it's going to grow to 500 billion cells, right?
Right. And so, you know, when I started, there was we started with this idea of pitchable yeast with Homebrew Mart in San Diego, because they wanted people to be able to pitch that container of yeast that day they came in and not grow something. We weren't the first yeast company. We were the first ones to just give homebrewers enough yeast that in 12 hours you had a fermentation going. And that was closer to, say, 50 billion cells total. And then, 75, and now over 100, and now there's 200 that people talk about in total billion cells. We don't talk about that on a commercial scale too much, because there's no one size brewers. In home brewing, it's generally increments of 5 gallons, 20 liters. And commercial, it's all sorts of different sizes. So home brewing, it makes it a little more simplified that way, that we're generally talking about a certain volume. So you can talk about a certain total number of cells.
So, a fresh package of your yeast, I think, contains around 100 billion cells, right? Is that right?
Right.
And many of your competitors are very similar rates. I know some of them advertise more, but, some similar amount of yeast, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's become kind of the standard in that 100 to 200 billion cell range for liquid yeast.
So what if you go absolutely crazy and you actually overpitch the yeast? Does it create problems as well?
It does. A little more subtle. You don't have the disastrous situation of contamination and things, but what you get is not much yeast growth. Mm-hmm. And so you might not get the ester profile you're looking for. You pitch a whole bunch of yeast into Hefeweizen, you're not going to get much banana ester. Or Saison, or any kind of these beers you're looking for, certain flavors. One reason why lager beer has a higher pitching rate, it is because it's colder. But the end result is less yeast growth, less yeast flavors, more malt and hops driven.
So,
and where people really run into trouble on the overpitching is not from our commercial packages. You can use 2, 3, whatever you want on these the counts I mentioned, but it's when you're repitching yeast from all of that yeast that just grow. Now you have like 500 billion cells, right? And you start using that a few times, and it just makes the cells really old because you're not generating new cells.
And I do want to talk about that in just a minute. It's very, I get that question all the time about we can talk about it now. How do you pitch, what's the right amount of slurry to pitch if you're harvesting yeast or reusing yeast, particularly like on a homebrew scale?
Well, so if yeast grow to, if you grew yeast to 50 million cells per mil, and you collected that, now it's going to be about a billion cells per mil. So that's where you can really get into the math if you want, and if people want to, and say, okay, if I collect a liter of yeast at 100 billion cell, 100 billion cells, 100, see, that's where you get into the total number.
Hard doing math.
Yeah, especially through Zoom here, right? Or whatever we're on. But so 50 million. So when you're in the beer fermentation, you're in the millions of cells per mil range, right? 10 million cells per mil, 50 million cells per mil. When you collect the slurry, you're in the billions of cells per mil range. So
really, so the slurry, the slurry at the bottom has that much yeast in it, really?
Yeah. Wow. Generally about 1 billion cells per mil.
That's amazing. I had no idea it was that much. So you really don't need a giant amount of slurry. I sort of assumed it had grain particles and other stuff mixed in with it.
No, yeah, but there's so much yeast that packs. It's 1 billion is really easy to collect. you know, getting two or three makes it super concentrated. So,
so I mean, literally, you talk about a billion cells per mil. You need like 100 milliliters of slurry, maybe, or something like that, to get what you have in original yeast packet, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Now, this is yeast that's gone through a fermentation, a little different than the yeast in the yeast package from us. Again, there's different ways to make yeast. We have a really long, patient 21-day process to get the cells in the right physiology to really do a beer fermentation. Some people can make it in a few days, but that's going to have a different physiology. But when you do a beer fermentation, you know, you've got yeast that is gone through a beer fermentation, a lot longer period of anaerobic non-oxygen exposure, lower glycogen levels, longer time in the fermenter. So there's where that the pitching rates we'll get to talk about really apply to repitching.
So if I, but if I'm looking to repitch, I don't need a massive amount of yeast, right? I just need, 100 mil, maybe a little bit more, right? 200 mil, something like that.
Yeah, 200 mils.
For we're talking again a 5-gallon, 19-liter batch, but yeah.
Exactly. So how easy is it to take 500 mils, 600 mils, a pint, right? And that's where it's so easy to get into overpitching when you're reusing, because you have all that yeast there. It's like, why don't I use a little bit more? Well, then you're not going to get the same ester profile you're looking for.
And the other question is the time factor. So if I harvest that yeast today, I mean, how long can I pitch that or reuse that? Is it good in a week? Is it good in 2 weeks?
2 weeks is a good rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Technically 2 days, right? But 2 weeks works well. And there's people who save them for months, but they generally do a little workup with it when they do that. But 2 weeks is good. But that means you got to think about when you collected it too. That doesn't mean the beer's been sitting there for a month. Then you collect it. Then you have 2 weeks, right? Because the yeast has been sitting in the bottom of the fermenter. That's 2 weeks from that fermentation being done.
So is that primary fermentation done? How do you?
Yeah, when primary is done, right? When you're at final ground.
So that's fairly early on then. I mean, in some cases that can be just a couple of days into the fermentation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's when your 2 weeks start.
And so if I want, let's say I harvest yeast out of my fermenter today, can I, do I have to put it in the fridge? How do I keep it good for a couple of weeks?
You want to keep it cold. You want to keep it in a resting state. And there's so many ways to collect it too. And the people who are good at it often don't even know they're doing all these right things, but one person can have yeast last, a couple of weeks, and somebody 3 days later, they say, oh, it's dead. There's really a lot of details come in. How long was it from you collected it? Did you introduce a lot of oxygen when you collected the yeast? Mm-hmm. Probably something a lot of people don't think about. But oxygen sparks yeast to thinking from metabolism. They'll start consuming their internal carbohydrates. So minimizing oxygen and pickup at yeast collection is extremely important. That's why we built a whole system of peer pitch around our yeast package. But you want to collect it with as little oxygen pickup as possible, as early as possible, and store it as cold as possible without freezing.
So I guess I had one more question. If you're reusing this yeast and it's got a certain amount of quantity to it, is there any way to tell what quantity you're actually pitching at that point? I mean, what's the right amount?
Well, there's a lot of pitching rate calculators, and they're all really good. I haven't run into a pitching rate calculator. I said, oh, this is bad. And so people have done a good job building ones that kind of tell, they make some assumptions on the calculators. But it's okay. They kind of push you to a large amount, which is okay, because of some of the assumptions about viability and things like that. But it's just so easy to calculate. If you know what pitching rate you want to have and you configure slurry at a billion cells per mil, that's going to get you a successful approximation of how much yeast to add. Okay. You can certainly put it in the microscope and count the slurry. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Last question on slurry. I know some people go through a process called washing the yeast and then to prepare it to store it long term, you know, to reuse yeast and potentially use it, you know, weeks or even months from now. Can you talk a little bit about that? What's that process involved and how do you do that?
Well, it's not something everybody should do. You are risking contamination by working with yeast on the tabletop and adding potential contaminants. So it's something you should really do for a purpose. You have a high gravity beer. You want to wash off that ethanol. You have an interest in working with yeast. But it, you know, just recognize that you have another handling practice. It's not necessary for most people. Darker beers can reduce viability in storage for reasons that aren't that well known. So to me, that's another example of washing yeast. But you don't have to worry about an IPA or something like that. Those hops aren't damaging to the yeast. But if you'd wash it, it's pretty simple to add sterile water. Mm-hmm. Mix the yeast, let the yeast settle again, pour it off, do that a couple of times. That's washing yeast. But what you're also doing is adding oxygen, mm-hmm. which is so bad for yeast if you're going to store it. So I really don't recommend it.
So you probably recommend just maybe storing the slurry itself and then maybe doing a starter again, I guess, when you start it back up or something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, beerwort is so amazing as a nutrient base for yeast. Why take it out of there, right? Yeah. We addressed in the book, we had to, because people want to, and we wanted to give some techniques for it. And like I said, there's some times where you want to do it, but the nutrient level in malted barley wort is so excellent, even though a lot of that's been consumed by the yeast of the fermentation. It's just a really healthy media for yeast.
Okay, well, I'm going to drop slurry for a minute. Let's go back to actually talk about pitching rates, and also let's start with what are some of the advantages of pitching the right amount of yeast?
Pitching a good amount of yeast is important. Pitching an exact amount of yeast, I think people might be misinterpreting that a little bit. Mm-hmm. So you want to pitch the right amount of yeast so you have a good fermentation, a consistent fermentation. You know what? If you operate a commercial brewery, you want to know what your pitching rate is, so you know what your fermentation timeline is going to be, your expected flavors. But most of the industry doesn't do that with a microscope. I like microscopes. I'd like everybody to use one. But how does that work without a microscope? You have to ask yourself that, right? And most home brewers probably aren't using microscopes either. And I always encourage you to use them, but that shows if there was an exact number that really mattered, everybody would have a microscope, even though that doesn't really give you an exact number. So we talk about that too. So there's these ranges that are really important to be in.
So there's a range. And I think, for example, in your book, I think you list pitch rates between, I looked it up last night, 0.75 and 1 million cells per milliliter degree Play-Doh, which why don't we start with maybe explaining what that number means?
When people started making higher gravity beers, mm-hmm. Commercially, and then water them down later, like most of the industrial breweries do. When that process got started, they realized when they're adding yeast to a higher gravity beer, they were getting higher esters. Mm-hmm. So people started compensating for that gravity with higher cell counts. And then homebrewers came along and craft brewers and stuff, and we've taken that number, those values, and used them. There's two ways to do it, right? You can say, pitch a number of cells, 7 million per mil, 10 million per mil. That's real microbiology.
Right.
You can also, in brewing, go millions of cells per mil per degree Plato. So right. If I have 10 million cells per mil in a 10 Plato beer, that's 1 million cells per mil per degree Plato.
Right.
And so there's people who like to, like a lot of commercial breweries still just say, I want to pitch 7.5 million cells. There are some that would say, I want 0.75 million cells per mil per degree Plato. It's part of our brewing language. And not everybody speaks the same language or studied the same amount of time in by Plato. But, you know, as a... But I try to cover what everybody wants to talk about.
Right. You know, so, I mean, but that's sort of the standard, that, and that number has been around for a long time, I think. I can't remember if it goes back to Noonan or what. It's quite old, I think. But I mean, right. does it really work when you go to really high gravity beers? Do I really need, you know, let's say I'm brewing a very heavy, you know, high gravity beer. Do I really need, you know, 10 times the amount of yeast or whatever?
Well, if you, it kind of covers all your bases, but because if you really oxygenated to 10 ppm, you don't really need it's not as necessary to have that much more yeast, but it's so hard to get to 10 ppm at higher gravity that more yeast helps compensate for the lower oxygen levels in the wort.
I see. So it is, it's a good rule of thumb, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then, as you mentioned earlier, for a lager, we double that number. So we go from 0.75 million to 1.5 million cells per degree Plato milliliter. Why does a lager need almost twice as much?
Well, when you're fermenting at 50, 55 Fahrenheit, it's great that lager yeast ferments at that temperature. But they certainly don't ferment at the same kinetics of a, you know, 68 degree fermentation. They don't grow as many new cells. So if you're not going to grow as many new cells, you got to start with more cells. And so that's really the compensation for it is adding more because they're not going to grow to that same level.
And as I mentioned, these numbers have been around a long time. Are they still relevant when we talk about working with modern commercial yeast?
Yeah, like a lot of brewing handed down information, it's stood the test of time. Now, there are new styles that ferment hotter, that therefore you get more yeast growth, that you can use a little bit less. There's like Gweigs and other things people have done, Saisons, even at higher temperatures. But in general, it's still a pretty good rule of thumb. I mean, you're going to make good beer being around these rules of thumb.
Okay. I believe you also need to adjust for the age of the yeast. So we talk about something like we talk about the viability of a yeast sample, right? If it comes out of your factory, we talked about, you know, it has maybe 100 billion cells in the package. And over time, of course, even if it's stored properly, that's going to slowly decline, right?
Yes. And that's an important part of most of the online calculators that really, increase the amount of yeast people use, because there's a viability box on a lot of them that's based on manufacturing date of the yeast.
Right.
And our yeast has a lot higher viability than that number when you punch it in for a date. We should probably put our own on there someday, but then again, you know, it works when you use more. You're not over-pitching.
Yeah, actually, I made an adjustment at Beersmith. It does handle your, it cuts yours down quite a bit. I think it uses like half the viability number or loss or per month or something like that.
And that's part of what we've done. Yeah. In the 21-day process, in the pure pitch process, to collect the yeast in the film itself and not introduce oxygen, keep these glycogen levels high, grow them patiently. So we get really high viabilities of time.
And then, of course, that drives a lot of people to use a starter. And quite often, yeah. When I work with liquid yeast, I do use a starter these days. What are your thoughts on the need for a starter? You know, do you always need a starter? Is it okay to not have a starter? What do you think?
Well, starter never hurts. I mean, You're activating the yeast. You're giving it some, you're taking it out of that cold, dormant situation. And I think most brewers notice a great fermentation. It does introduce a risk of contamination again, but if you're contaminating the starter, you probably are making contaminated beer anyway. So you just have to be careful. And you're adding a lot of yeast to a small volume, so that does help as well. And you're not going to get the same kind of growth in a starter that you would in your beer, because the volume's much smaller, less nutrients and carbohydrates per yeast cell. But if you like making starters, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. If you know the commercial, the pitching rates that are in liquid yeast, the cell counts in most liquid yeast I can think of on the market. If it's older, if it's a high gravity, that's helpful. It never hurts. That's the main thing. But it's not always necessary. And I think a lot of homebrewers have recognized that and just said, hey, you know what? I stopped making home. I hear that a lot because I talk about pitching rates and just try to put it in perspective if you need to or not. And a lot of homebrewers come back and say, oh, you know, I stopped making starters and your yeast is working great. It's the same beer. Because the thing about a calculator is, if you're looking at a calculator to do a starter, it doesn't matter if it's 100 billion cells, 150 billion cells, 200 billion cells. The calculator will always tell you to make starter.
Yeah.
Because you're still, if you're trying to get to a certain number, like 12 billion per mil, 15 billion per mil, there's no package that provides that.
Well, that's why, you take an average, I don't know, 10, 50 beer or something like that. It you know, it needs like 150 billion cells. So even a fresh package isn't going to deliver that without a starter, or the average typical homebrew package anyways.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. They're always going to tell you. So, I mean, that goes back to the question I asked earlier, though. Are these numbers still relevant? Do I really need, you know, a million, you know, cells per milliliter per degree Plato, or can I get by with less?
They're really relevant on repitching. And those numbers exist because those numbers came from repitching. That's what commercial breweries do, except once in a while, work up a new culture. Mm-hmm. With the you know, the commercial packages today, I mean, especially speaking about ourselves with the high viability and the high cell count, and it's not as necessary. But people are not doing the same thing they did 20 years ago either. They're fermenting cooler. I mean, the commercial category for sure is pitching at way cooler temperatures than they used to. They're fermenting higher gravity beers. So that's where your starter just becomes a catch-all, you know, because it can kind of make all sorts of different beers, high gravity beers. And you know, the homebrewers are often starting with new yeast on a range of different kind of parameters. You know, like where I mentioned the pitching, most people used to pitch at 68, 70, 72. Now there's hardly a commercial brewery you go to that's not pitching at 65. May sound small, but that's a huge difference to yeast.
That's that is quite a difference, obviously. And as you mentioned, the beer gravities have gone up quite a bit. We used to drink, you know, like 3% beer, and now it's, you know, 6, 7, 8 in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and that's why those calculators are kind of helpful. Like you know, it'll tell you 300 billion cells, 250 billion cells. I mean, they're all going to say one of those kind of numbers, and if you do that, it's going to work great.
Right.
But if you're a little under that with a fresh yeast, it's still going to work great.
Right. So, how do the pitch rates we discussed apply when using dry yeast? You know, I've often seen quite a bit less dry yeast used when we pitch.
Well, it's kind of similar to what I'm talking about. It's not the same numbers either as repitching. You're not, when you're using dry yeast, you're not pitching 10, 15 million cells per mil. You're pitching about 5.
Right.
Sometimes less. Because if it's a 10 gram package, there's 10 billion cells in there per gram. That's about 100 billion cells. So plus or minus around 100 billion is where most of the homebrew yeast packages sit. And so that's not 150 billion or 200 billion or 300 billion either. But they ferment really fast, right? And people think, oh, sometimes when I use dry yeast, it works really fast. That's a lot of cells that were grown with oxygen, even more oxygen than liquid yeast producers, because they're growing on a fed batch process. And if you use these repitching numbers, it's probably too much. And you see that on some of the sites to just kind of warn homebrewers.
Yeah, because most people don't make a starter for dry yeast typically because, you know, partially because they just got a really, really long shelf life, right?
Right.
they don't suffer from the viability issues we talked about earlier. They lose like 1% a month or 2% a month or something like that. Very small numbers.
Yeah. It's in a really, a good state for storage.
Shelf stable. Yeah.
Yep.
So, meads, wines, and ciders often get away with much lower pitch rates too, even though they have much higher starting gravities. Can you tell us why that is?
Well, it's interesting. You're right. I mean, they tend to be around 1, 2, 3 million cells per mil total. And that's one of the keys to a beer fermentation. It's getting in the millions of cells per mil range in any kind of beverage fermentation. You don't want to be in the hundreds of thousands of cells per mil range, which is what I was getting when I started homebrewing. That's going to have you that 2, 3, 4 day lag time. You want to get in the millions of cells per mil range, whether it's 10 or 15 or 3, 5, starts to get some nuances. And so most of the non-beer industry pitches lower, and the distilling industry, for example, and they do 24-hour fermentations at a million or two million cells per mil. They're fermenting warmer in some cases, simpler media, not as complex carbohydrates, and not as flavor dominated as beer is by some of the yeast characteristics.
So I mean, they're also pitching into a must, I guess, that is much more fermentable, right? I mean, mostly simple sugars, right?
Most of those other products don't have a boil, and what are we doing in a boil? We're driving out oxygen, and then we have to mechanically put it back in, and we just mostly don't achieve the 10 ppm. Which is sort of ambient oxygen concentration. So, if you don't drive the oxygen out, there's a lot more oxygen there to begin with, and the fermentations go better.
I mean, for example, I like to make mead, and I make it at, insanely high gravities, 1150 and stuff. And, it ferments just fine with just a packet or two of yeast. Pretty amazing.
Yeah. And it's a cost factor as well, because most of those other industries, obviously the home situation is a little different, but are buying new yeast for every batch. And where brewers have this great healthy yeast, and they, in commercial settings, reuse it a few times. And so if you're buying it on every batch, you spend a lot of time experimenting on the lower pitching rates and going, this works great.
Well, you mentioned another topic. How many times can I reuse my yeast? Let's say I repitch it within a week or two. How many times can I reuse it?
Yeah, theoretically, it's indefinite. And certainly that has happened a lot in the past. But for best practices, generally 5 or 10 times in a commercial setting, or 2 months, 5 or 10 times over a year, that's very old yeast. So within a 2 month period, 5 to 10 times, homebrewing, generally 2 or 3, just because you're not brewing one batch after the next batch after the next batch. I mean, I say you can hold it for 2 weeks as a rule of thumb, but that's not optimal. I mean, 2 days is optimal. It's just still likely going to work. It's usually 50% dead after 4 weeks. So that 2 weeks kind of gives you still a pretty good culture. But you do that every time, you're only getting a few batches out of that yeast.
Well, and the other problem, I guess, homebrewing, we don't have, it's not all super sterile conditions either in a lot of cases.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's one of the big differences. Nothing on the brewing scale is really starting with sterile media like we would in yeast production, and a lot of aseptic techniques and things like that.
Well, do you have any other tips or closing thoughts on pitching yeast?
Just when we talk about cell counts, it's important to not take it too exact. And let me explain what I mean. If I take the temperature of the wort and it's 65 degrees, it's 65 degrees. I can do that 3 times at 65 degrees. If I count yeast in a microscope and it's 9.71 million cells per mil, you're not going to do it again. It's 9.71. So when I write about this more in the future, I'm going to try to be a little more explanatory there, where it's not the same as a measurement of weight or temperature or something like that. You're taking a tiny, 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 tiny volume, 0.1 microliter, and counting that to represent all of these liters. And so, yeah, it's going to show you it's not hundreds of million cells. You get in this range, but it's not a number you can duplicate time after time after time. So that's where that comes in, is if you're making a starter and you say, I'm going to make a starter for this, and it's going to go to 12.2. And it's going to, you're just going to get close to that, but it's not exactly that number, because a cell count is, I mean, maybe approximation is a bad word because it's pretty scientific, but it's a tiny, tiny little piece of that whole volume.
It's a sample, right? Single sample.
Yeah. And when you're in slurry, that sample of billions of cells per mil is much more difficult to count than when you're in the fermentation of millions of cells per mil, because the homogenization of the sample. So I would never put an exact number, like, I don't put on our yeast bag 100 or 150 billion cells per mil. That's really not true. It's close to that.
Right.
But, you know, three different people are going to get a different number. It's going to be very close to that. And you can't be off. You don't want to be off. But just trying to describe how the cell counts work and what's really inside, the flask you're holding and this kind of starter you're trying to make.
Well, we got a minute or two here too at the end. I wonder if there's what's new at White Labs. What have you been working on recently?
A lot of things. We have 23 different projects going during the last, with more on deck here at, with more of a team based approach at White Labs. Something we kind of started before the pandemic, but we've really just created more teams during the pandemic because people had some time to work on some other things without all the other stuff going on with, having a little production volume and not all the conferences and stuff like that. So we have a new website coming out.
Do you really?
B-day now.
Tell us about that.
Well, we spent a lot of time on it, a website's a funny thing. You know, you do a new one and everybody goes, oh, this is great. But I know in a few years, you got to do a new one again. The technology is going to change in a way we don't even know it's going to change. But by the time you look back at your old site, it's old. It doesn't do all the things you want it to do. So it was time. And so we started that last year, even a little earlier than that. But it's a lot of details to go through every page and reformat things and add the things that we need to talk about today, that our business has changed in terms of locations and having the restaurants and the White Labs Brewing Company and the different things. And people going to the website looking for more things than sometimes than just a list of yeast strains. And so we've never had such effective teams working. You know, we have, because we can bring in people from our education group and our molecular biology group and marketing and all sorts of stuff, and all collaborate together on things like this new website. And I've just been so happy to see how it works so much better. And when we release something, it's ready.
So it's nice having, COVID's had some positive effects because people are able to maybe focus a little more and not have as many distractions, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And we released a new nutrient for seltzer last year with that same, hard seltzer with that same kind of team-based approach. We have lots of innovations coming on our, the Pure Pitch yeast itself and the package and, that we've been working on real, real hard on. So a lot of exciting things coming down. I'm real optimistic about White Labs and the industry coming out of this. I think, even though a few breweries will close, for example, somebody's going to buy that equipment and say, hey, I lost my job in the pandemic. I want to start a brewery.
Yeah. And I think, we're all hoping that this year is going to be the year of the recovery, certainly, for brewing. Well, Chris, have you got any closing thoughts, final thoughts, perhaps?
Well, I just enjoy talking to your listeners and you, Brad. I look forward to when we can do this in person again at some of the different things we've participated in the past with Brew Your Own and other all sorts of organizations. But I know a lot of people are homebrewing out there. Homebrewing has seen a little uptick during the pandemic. So, happy to again talk to everybody and also look forward to the industry rebounding.
Me too, Chris. I'm looking forward to it as well. And home brewing has been good. So, I mean, it has been good for home brewing, but I think we're all certainly looking forward to getting back to normal, I hope. Well, Chris, it's been a great pleasure having you on again. Thank you for taking the time to be with me today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And my guest today was Dr. Chris White, president of White Labs and author of the book Yeast, which you can find from Brewers Publications. Thanks again, Chris. A big thank you to Dr. Chris White for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with the new Brew Commander. To order yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, I urge you to give Beersmith 3 Brewing Software a try. If you've not downloaded the new 3.0 update, grab it now as it includes improved data storage, additional dry hop options, new mash pH models, and much more. To download your free 21-day trial, go to beersmith.com today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.